welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. With me today in the studio is Professor Victor Galia. Professor Galia is Associate Professor at the School of Agriculture and Food Sciences at the University of Queensland in Australia. He gained his PhD in 1987 from the School of Agriculture at La Trobe University, and he has varied interests, research interests, about which we shall be speaking today. Plant disease forecasting, an interest in education, disseminating agricultural science to students, and a lovely research project about biological woody weed management. So we look forward to hearing about that. And his research grants, I might say, over the years, from 1994 to this year, he's managed to obtain $2 million. So I hope, I presume he's managed to do quite a bit with that. He has some books and many papers to his name. The latest ones, which I won't even try to mention the names of them, because they have long Latin names, and I shall make a whole mess of them. But they sound very interesting, and they're about coffee. Some research is in Papua New Guinea about the quality of coffee, and I think that's a very topical subject, so I hope we'll also have time to talk about that. Welcome to the program, Professor Galia.
And thank you for having me here, Tricia.
So let's say you're here, obviously, you're touring Europe. You were telling me that you visited other universities in Europe, and so this is really a study tour, or what the English would call a busman's holiday?
That's correct. A few years ago, I won a national teaching award in Australia, which was presented to me by the Minister for Education, who now happens to be our Prime Minister, Julie Gillard. And part of that award was a certain sum of money for travel and development, and I decided to do something about it. So here I am.
And clearly, from your name, you have Maltese connections, so you were drawn to come to Malta for family reasons, I presume, as well.
That's correct. I'm a first-generation Australian, but both of my parents came from Gozo, my father from Arp, and my mother from Shara. And I still have family here. Needless to say, the majority of my relatives are actually in Australia. Many of them were in the post-war immigration wave, which happened. I think if you took all the Australian Maltese, tried to bring them back to Malta, we would sink the island. They just would not fit.
Absolutely. The diaspora is huge. These research programs that I mentioned during the brief introduction, plant disease forecasting, and the other two as well, they look very, very interesting, because not only do they have obvious scientific interest, but they are interesting, could be interesting at a social level, at an ethical level. So there's lots really to talk about within each of the research programs that we've been working on. Let's start with plant disease forecasting. What made you move into that area?
Plant diseases have typically been managed by routine spraying of fungicides, and generally it would be on a weekly basis. The driver behind that research was to develop an understanding of how plant diseases work, then to use that knowledge to find a better way of managing them. Plant diseases respond to environmental conditions, and as most farmers would understand, in wet weather or humid weather, diseases accelerate, and in dry weather, they tend to slow down. So by using small weather stations, we can predict disease activity, and time the sprays more effectively. And in one of our systems, which was to manage a disease in onions, we were able to reduce the fungicide sprays by 50% and still manage the maximum yield. So this is all about not spraying fungicides when they're not required and spraying them only when they're needed. Farmers in Australia have taken to this system and this approach. We have developed 5 such models, mainly for vegetable crops, and there has been very good uptake in Australia. In other countries, there are similar models available for other crops as well.
I presume it's cheaper to do it that way rather than just sort of blast for a long period when you're not really when it's not really doing any good.
That's true. Fungicide spraying is quite expensive. It's not only the chemicals but the time required to do so and the machinery that is tied up. So all in all, it's more effective and better for the environment and safer for the consumer because we reduce the chemical load on the system.
And the funguses themselves, the fungi, do you know where they come from? Are they owing to, I don't know, natural causes or pollution? Well, what are the reasons that these fungi turn up regularly?
Well, most crop diseases are fungi which are there in the environment already, or they may reside in the soil and then reappear, or literally move on to weeds nearby. But once you have a particular disease in a system, it remains there forever. It's just a case of accepting that you will have that disease again next season and managing it the best way.
I'm not no scientist, but I know that fungi tend to sort of lie dormant until they get the right environment, and then they flourish again.
That's correct, and our research is about understanding what are those environmental factors. Is it leaf wetness, temperature, relative humidity, rainfall? These are all factors we can measure using small weather stations, and we develop a model. I have a PhD student who's just recently submitted her thesis. It's under examination at the moment, and she developed a brand new model for the powdery mildew disease we get in cucurbit crops, which are things like melons, zucchini, pumpkin, etc. And so that's a world first, and we hope to have that model out and being used in another year or so.
Well, those are very familiar vegetables for in the Maltese environment. I don't know whether we have any problems as far as fungi is concerned with those kind of vegetables, but if we do, they'd probably be very happy to hear from you. What about other kinds of things like insects and other things that attack the fruits and vegetables or the crops? Are you interested in those at all? I mean, is that a problem in your part of Australia?
Yes, we have a lot of issues with insect attacking crops. That's the field of entomology, which I don't work in, but I work in a broader field which is called integrated pest management, where we look at all problems of crops. When you're managing a farm, you don't just separate the diseases from the insects, from the weeds. You deal with the whole package. And one of the philosophies we teach in our agriculture course at the University of Queensland is a holistic approach of crop management, which includes managing all those pests as well as things like irrigation and nutrition. So it's a lot like the philosophy of the way human health has moved to a holistic approach of trying to bring together a whole range of understandings rather than to compartmentalise our understanding in neat little boxes. So I do work with an entomologist, and I have some familiar understanding with a lot of the pests, and there are relationships. Some plant diseases are spread by insect pests, and many plant diseases reside in weeds as well. So weeds, insects and plant diseases all come together as a group of organisms which interact with each other. So
they're all linked in.
They are all linked into the system, and understanding integrated pest management is how we deal with all of those pests in their totality.
I would have thought that in a really a continent, really, like Australia. It's all very well, the holistic approach, yes, definitely, but where you've got the kind of farmland that is so different from north to south, west to east, I would have thought it was quite complex, because you must have different things going on in different areas of the country, really. So you can't just, there isn't something that's done in Perth doesn't necessarily work out if you're in Sydney or whatever.
Well, that's true to a certain extent. There's great variation in the cropping systems and the climate across the country. There are some basic principles which do apply universally, but there is no one formula that works in every place. One of the ways in which we've dealt with that in Australia is to develop a class of professionals called crop managers or integrated crop managers who fine-tune this understanding for each crop in each area. So our students that we train can literally move to a new zone and then adapt and develop practice. And agriculture in Australia is a very professional industry. Now it is highly mechanised, not just in terms of tractors and sprayers, etc., which are all rather large and computer managed and so forth, but the way in which farmers work now, they all have computers in their offices, they use the internet a lot, they have a lot of technology to support their industry, which is a very technologically driven industry now, and there's this class of professional consultant that helps with crop management. Bearing in mind we still have small farms which are managed on a more local level and certainly managed in much the same way as a farm might be managed here in Malta. But we have some very large properties. There are, you know, cotton farms which may be 6,000 hectares in size. We've got cattle stations which are 1 million hectares in size. However, they still need to be managed, and a lot of those principles are still fairly basic in many respects.
You mentioned your students, and I think that sort of to move on to the second research program that you told me you were interested in, because it's important, as you said, to be creating always a new breed of student who is able to be versatile, flexible, cope with modern technology, and this can't actually be that easy. And I know that you've got some strong ideas about how that should be done.
Yes, that's an interesting area. I've always been driven by the needs to educate and to develop a student that is very interested and inquisitive. That comes from my background. My mother, although she wasn't formally educated, was a very curious person, and also in some ways I think she was quite intellectual, although lacking in a formal education, and she drove me to find better ways to learn and to understand and relate to the real world. And so I suppose to honour her, education has always been important in my life. In terms of what I do with my students, I've spent a lot of time developing authentic learning experiences. Agriculture can be taught by the book, which can be very formal and uninteresting, or it can be taught by realistic exercises. And I've developed a whole range of learning scenarios in which students begin to imagine that they're working with farmers, and that has started from the use of a CD-ROM which has a range of problem scenarios which students work through. We then move to another level where students then begin to work in an informal level with farmers to identify problems and help them solve them, through to a more formal level where we actually place students on farms as a part of their program, and on a weekly basis they investigate their crops and provide feedback, and so literally an apprenticeship type program. And that's not done in a lot of universities in Australia. The idea is to give them some industry competence. The wonderful thing about that process where the students are working with farmers is that the farmers enjoy their relationship with the students. Admittedly, many of the farmers are quite fearful of working with university students, mm-hmm. thinking that they may not have anything of value to give, but when they realise the students are also equally apprehensive, they then develop a lovely relationship. And now I have farmers who have been doing this for 10 or more years who can't wait for the next batch of students. And so the students learn real practice, they learn from farmers, they learn more about the real problems of farming, they do research for the farmers and come back with new information, they help them work through problems. And so I do this in a graduated way from the simulation through to the actual. And that was one of the reasons I won the National Teaching Award, was for that particular program, among other little exercises.
Yes, I would have thought that technology can help enormously in an area such as yours, because I've never seen any of these CDs, but I've used a couple in the field of archaeology, and it was a very good introduction, and you can create that different scenarios quite easily and interchange and create more, change the problems and then get the students to answer. And I think that technology, which is interesting, which the students are probably very used to nowadays.
Well, they are, but to a certain extent many still resist using technology as well. We all make the assumption that the modern generation of student is computer savvy, and many are not. And I think possibly previous generations were more curious about computers when they were new. Those that are born in the computer age quite often resist the technology and use it at a superficial level. The CD that I developed, what I did with that was to distill everything that I know and put into practice as a plant pathologist, and to try to create a CD which would literally pass all that knowledge on. However, the trick was not just to give them the CD, it was also about interpreting that as well. And so I do a lot of online interactive work with students to help interpret how that CD operates and what the scenarios are about, and how to critically examine the cases and pull them apart. Interestingly, that CD is being used across Australia in other universities. I made it freely available to academics, and through the Higher Education Committee, I think it's called in the UK, it's freely available to the UK and to other EU countries as well. And I'm not sure where it's being used there, it's just disseminated, but people, I get feedback occasionally from people saying that they find it quite useful, so I must have got something right.
I'm sure you did, and I'm sure the satisfaction of seeing something that you've actually created being used by other people and appreciated by other people, both academics and other students, must be great.
It is great, which is why I made it freely available. I thought that it would be one way I could put something back to the education industry and also to the profession of plant pathology, as a little vote of thanks for what it's done for me.
The last research subject that you mentioned was this lovely biological woody weed management. I suspect it's not as lovely as it sounds.
No, certainly not. Australia has many introduced weeds. I think it's more than 3,000 species at the last count, some of which are trees or shrubs and hence are woody, and some are noxious because they may be poisonous or have spines or both. Many of the weeds I work with are noxious weeds. They're actually listed in the top 25 weeds of Australia. We do have a top 25 listing.
Wow.
So our worst weeds are on a national register, and they are research priorities. And number one on that list is the weed Parkinsonia, which is one of the ones I work with. It has thorns. It grows up to 5 metres in height. Is very aggressive, and it currently occupies about 3 million hectares of the Australian landscape. In particular, it invades a lot of our cattle production areas as well as our natural reserves. And I've been developing a biological control, a fungus, which can kill that particular weed. And we've developed a way of inoculating the trees, and that is a patented process, and there's a company now developing that, and the idea is to make that available then to manage this weed. But the weed has spines. It's nasty to work with, and when I do field work with my students,
we wear thick gloves.
Well, we wear gloves, etc., but we get scratched and bleed and so forth, and sometimes you have to crawl on your belly in 45 degree heat in amongst these thorny thickets. But that's what research is all about.
So you think you're going to beat it?
We think we should. It may take another 10 or 15 years, but we're well on the way. We do work with other weeds as well, prickly acacia, which has spines which are nearly 2 inches in length and are very sharp. There's Mimosa pigra in the Northern Territory, in the wetlands, in crocodile country. So that's interesting research, because we have to watch out for crocodiles over one shoulder, snakes over the other shoulder, and then watch out for the spines as well. So that can be interesting.
Sounds like fun.
It's interesting. It's fun. It can be very hot. It can be hard work. But that's what it takes to push science forward.
Well, a necessary work, I would imagine, because there's an environmental issue here, really.
There is.
Very topical.
As well as one of the main methods for controlling these weeds in Australia is to use herbicides, which are environmentally damaging, as well as unsafe for the operator as well, because many of them do have nasty side effects, long-term and short-term. So the industry is very keen for us to develop these biological methods, which are very safe to use and ethically more responsible.
Well, in the last few minutes that we've got at our disposal, I'd love to hear about your research on coffee in Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea is not a country that would immediately pop into my mind at the mention of coffee. I mean, one thinks more of, I don't know, South America. Or do they produce a lot of coffee in Papua New Guinea?
Yes. Well, Papua New Guinea is a big coffee-producing nation. Indonesia as well, which is a neighbouring country also, mainly in the highlands, so at altitude. There is a big industry there, and my former PhD student, Dr. Mark Kenny, who comes from Papua New Guinea, actually worked for the Coffee Development Board there. And he brought this project to me when he came to do his PhD. There's a particular disease called coffee berry disease. It's a little understood disease in New Guinea. And Mark did a lot of research to understand how it spread, where it might lie dormant, and more importantly, how he might control that. So it was, like a lot of research in tropical countries, world first research, because, of course, it was a problem that had not had any attention. And he certainly did a lot to increase our understanding of this disease complex. But the industry is very important to Papua New Guinea.
Because we hear about fair pricing and this sort of thing, and that the farmers themselves aren't benefiting from this, I mean, hugely popular commodity that can actually make or break economies of large countries, because of course people, countries buy coffee on a huge scale. And so the work like your former PhD student did could really help, can't it, really, to improve the situation for these farmers.
That's true. Papua New Guinea has coffee produced both in large plantations but also by small landholders, and a great degree of it does come from these small landholders. This particular research was aimed at helping both groups, but importantly it should help those smaller producers to be more effective at their production, hopefully to reduce their chemical inputs, which are both costly as well as potentially harmful. And it should help that industry remain viable. There are many buyers of coffee who support ethical pricing, and coffee is an important cash crop for those producers in that country.
So you help them a little bit to make their lives a bit easier. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. I would like to thank Professor Victor Gallia for coming on the programme today. It was a pleasure to meet you and to hear about these very interesting aspects of agriculture. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tricia.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.